Now, I recently read Bring Larks and Heroes by Tom Keneally, and it's a truly great book, as is The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith, which we read last year in Bush Telegraph. You'll remember that, I think. Now, these are visionary works of Australian storytelling. Tom Keneally's been shortlisted for the Booker Prize 4 times. Isn't that extraordinary? Winning it in 1982 for Schindler's Ark, which, of course, Steven Spielberg made into that famous movie Schindler's List. He's also written a fair whack of non-fiction, including some sweeping works of Australian history. That includes a general history, which is now up to volume 2. And he's here today to talk about his new novel, novel number 29, Tom.
Look, I'm not counting because...
I counted them. It says, according to the number of the books that are listed on the flyleaf of your novel, this is number 29. It's called The Daughters of Mars. It's about two sisters who volunteer as nurses in WW1. Are you a musician? Do you play any music?
No. Look, I'm a folky monkey. I've even written a folk song, but my bathroom singing consists of old Scottish songs, old Irish songs, all those out-of-date songs of rebellion from Ireland, which you shouldn't sing now. It's songs of insolvency from Ireland.
That would be a great album. That would be a great... We should get Terence back and get you and him to rap on Songs of Insolvency. Talk about your novel another time. What a brilliant idea. Oh, dear. I suppose we better talk about the book because it's very good. It's called Daughters of Mars, and it's the story of the Durants. Is that how you say it, Durants?
Yes.
Sisters? Mm-hmm. And so tell us about them.
Well, they're like many World War One nurses. I encountered the journals of nurses through researching World War One, and I ordered a number of them from the War Memorial and stretcher bearers' journals too. I read a number of books, and there's a wonderful 3-volume history of the medical services in World War One, which is on the Australian War Memorial website. Fascinating book for a layman, and
is it published as a book or is it a totally as an online?
No, it was published as a series of three volumes, published in the late 30s, early 40s. In any case, I thought these women are too good not to write about. They're too good in a number of senses. They come from, we talk about the patriarchy now, but the patriarchy then was really something. And they were young women who entered the service with a fairly light heart, and they ran up against the military patriarchy, very, very much so. On Lemnos, the island off Gallipoli, where a great number of the wounded from Gallipoli were taken, the Australian nurses were treated so badly in terms of rations, clothing, and verbal and physical abuse that the Australian government considered pulling them out. And to save them from misuse, it was decided at last to give them military rank. The novel is a great deal about women finding themselves. I admire the stroppy women of the period.
Yeah. Well, you've got some stroppy women and some tough women. I mean, I don't know how we're going to do this because I don't want to give too much away, but I guess very early on we learn about what the Durant sisters have had to do at home. So their mother, it's a lovely device this, their mother is dying of cancer. She's dying a very painful death of cancer. And they commit a crime of compassion.
Yes, they commit a mercy killing. One steals the morphine, and as far as we know for the rest of the novel, the other injects it. And this draws the sisters irrevocably together, but it also drives them apart. They don't want to see each other after this crime. And then to their horror, they both find themselves, independently of each other, volunteering for this adventure, which will, because no one in 1914 thought World War One would be the cataclysm it was, an adventure in which they will nurse young men and even see young men die. And this will sort of raise the water level of trauma to almost to cover the mercy killing of which they've been guilty.
Well, you start with the very intimate pain of their mother, and the moral enormity of killing your own mother as an act of compassion, to pain and suffering on an almost on an incomprehensible scale. So there they are, surrounded by the horrors of Gallipoli, and they experience them in the wards and operating theatres of the Red Cross hospital ship, the Archimedes. Now, this must have been a very hard section to write, because it could have gone very wrong, it seems to me, because basically they perform a series of operations and medical procedures which just go on and on and on and on and on. And it could have seemed like you were just showing off your research, but actually the unrelenting parade of suffering and anguish and the need to, you know, find a medical way of dealing with it just holds us for page after page. Was that tough to get right?
Yes, it was. And indeed, in the first draft, I put too much in. I wasn't consciously showing my research off when I wrote too much, and it had to be cut down. I wasn't consciously, but as you would know, Michael, all writers are narcissist exhibitionists, so maybe we show off without, given half a chance, we show off without being invited. And so maybe I was doing that, and we had to cut that medical material down. It was very hard material to gather, because the nurses say things like, this man's wound was so bad we had to constantly irrigate it. This is in the days before penicillin, and I didn't know what irrigating a wound was. I had to research that, and fortunately I've got a brother who's a doctor, and he's a bit of a medical historian. He knows another doctor in Melbourne, who is very much a medical historian and a historian of anaesthesia. And both my sister-in-law, two of my sister-in-laws and my wife, were nurses in the 1950s, 1960s. And they all said, well, we weren't so far from World War One. The big difference was, of course, penicillin. You didn't have to keep the constant watch on septicemia that these young women did.
I'm very glad I wasn't invited over to your house while you were writing this book. I can see these macabre evenings where we're all discussing grotesque medical procedures. This is Tom Keneally on Books and Arts Daily, and we're talking about his new novel. It's called The Daughters of Mars, and I laugh because one has to laugh, I suppose, but there are lots of details about the horror of war. And I guess the powerful message is such a terrible word to use. The powerful impact of this book is to make you realise that this is not a heroic story. You know, in war so often, in the way we tell it, soldiers either return as heroes or they become something noble called the fallen.
Yes.
But your book isn't about this. You don't talk about bravery. There really is no patriotic piety in this book.
No, well, that to an extent, I'm amazed at the endurance of the young women and the different kind of endurance of the frontline troops. But I wanted to puncture some of the pieties we hear about the fallen, because the fallen is such an antiseptic term. It means they, you know, bullet through the heart, they fell over.
Yes, it's a noble death, isn't it, to become the fallen?
It glissades over shell shock. It glissades over the burning of membranes of the throat and lung by gas. And it glissades over what happens to Captain Constable in this book, the removal of your face. Mm. What happens to a human being when their face is sheared off by shrapnel?
And yet you survive.
And you're living, and you have to write notes to the nurses, and every day they're dressing this horror, which is your face, and they're trying to get it ready for ultimate surgery.
You can write with piety or you can write with pity, but perhaps you can't write with both.
There's no denying, as I say, the valour and the feeling that men had that if they could transfer the fraternity of the trenches into civil society, then, forgive me, all would be well with the world. In reality, as we know, the soldiers came back, even though the book doesn't cover this, to a sundered world, to a world that's splitting into people who want their rights and who are written off as communists, and the extreme right-wing militias, which begin to form, made up of former servicemen, begin to form almost at once.
Yeah. So the world, if the boys had gone off to defend the world they knew or the society they knew, as you say, lots went off for more light-hearted reasons than that, but the world that they were supposedly fighting for wasn't there when they came home.
That's exactly right. That sense of cohesion wasn't there, and of course it was what was left of it was destroyed by the Depression. And so it is sad to see these valiant young men fighting in the last of wars, as far as they're concerned. And you know it wasn't. Mm. Of course, amongst other wounds that don't get particularly a lot of treatment in the pieties of our memorial days, are the shell shock, men being buried alive by high explosive and having to be dug out, and the men who caught the sexually transmitted diseases in the brothels of Amiens or in the brothels of Cairo. These are men who were often quite innocent. Some of them were virgins. And they bowl along, and so one of the scenes in the book is about nurses injecting men who have syphilis. They were a minority, admittedly, but they were more numerous than we like to think.
You know, so, when I started doing historical research and doing work at the memorial, at the war memorial, so this was... when was I doing that? In the early 80s. There were still sections of military reports that were classified, and they're classified because they're reports on VD.
Yes. You know,
it was still sensitive long after these blokes were dead.
And to give the Australian authorities their due, we, instead of saying, as the Americans did, just keep your legs crossed when you go into Amiens or back to Paris, they set up blue light tents where men could go without any record being kept of them, and they could get checked out when they came back from leave. And it reminded me of the way Australia dealt with the AIDS epidemic so much more successfully than the Americans did, with the, you know, torn between believing it was a disease and believing it was the wrath of God. There is something to be said for Australian practicality in these matters.
Yeah. On RN, this is Books and Arts, and we're talking to Tom Keneally about his new novel. Let's talk about why you've written a novel, because, as I say, you also write a lot of non-fiction, and you're writing this monumental history of Australia. So you've written Volume 2, which does deal with this period as well. So did you encounter something while you were doing your historical writing that made you think, oh, there's a novel in this?
Yes, I did. And I read Peter Rees' book, The Other Anzacs, and that made me order the journals of nurses from the Australian War Memorial, order copies, and also stretcher bearers from the Mitchell Library, because the War Memorial didn't exist till the late 30s. And so a lot of World War I people left their memoirs to the Mitchell.
So the Mitchell Library is part of the State Library of New South Wales.
Yes, for that's
in
right.
Other parts of the country.
And to an extent, in that history I wrote, I did look at battles, but I thought the most interesting way to look at this, post Les Carline and post other writers who've looked at this so well, look at the readout, R-E-A-D out, from the trenches. Look at the young women who had to deal with the damage from this war. See the war not from the perspective of casualty numbers and offensives and retreats, but from the point of view of the damaged young men.
Yeah.
And
but what is it that fiction lets you do? I mean, it's an interesting choice. If you write a history book, then you're claiming that it's true. But once you write a fiction book, then, well, the contract with the reader is I've made some of this up.
Yeah,
so
yes,
why
absolutely.
Why do you choose that sometimes when what you want to do is look at historical truth in the face?
Well, you know, in history you can tell a big story. A big story of big and little people both. And in the novel you can take peripheral figures, forgotten figures. You can make up fictional figures as composites of figures that you've met or read about. And then you can tell divine lies. History is trying to tell the truth by telling the truth, and fiction is trying to tell the truth by telling lies. Mm. Fiction itself means a lie. And there are some lies in here. For example, wonderful character was, in reality, was Lady Dudley, wife of a quite hopeless Governor General. Prime Minister Fisher came to him and said, I want a double dissolution. He said no. And his secretary is sending reports back to the London press about how terrible it is to live under a socialist government, a Labour government in Australia. And so Lord Dudley was not a success as Governor General, and he was a high Tory, addle-brained character anyhow. He had a beautiful wife who'd been a hat maker called Lady Dudley, and she started, of course, they lived in Melbourne then, she started the bush nursing service down here from travelling round the bush. She was a goer, and she was a great beauty, and when World War One broke out, she was by then estranged from her husband, but she'd just come from Australia, and she decided to start an Australian voluntary hospital. Now, the military establishment didn't want her to. What's this crazy woman doing now? But she raised money from rich Anglo-Australians, and she started a hospital near Boulogne.
I'm going to cut you short because this is turning into a marathon.
I'm sorry.
It's like you're going for the Guinness Book of Records.
Anyhow, but she's a character in the book.
She appears as a character in the book. As indeed she does. I think it might have been Picasso who said that art is a lie that makes us realise the truth. Tom Kennelly, thank you for dropping by. It's been bracing as always. Thank you for coming here.
Sorry to be as prolix as Gough Whitlam in his prime.
They've been magnificent, and you're still in your prime. Tom Kennelly, the book is called Daughters of Mars, and it's from Vintage. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN.